Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, it's Brad. I just have one very quick announcement here. As you know, we've been nearly ad-free for these 275 episodes. We want to keep it that way, but we also want to give back to you guys who have been supporting us. There's a lot of generous donors out there, so we've started a Patreon account, which will allow you to continue to support us on a monthly basis, and in return, we can give back to you. We've already got a few special incentives up there, some merch, some outtakes, and we're going to come up with more as time goes on. So if you've already supported us, thanks tons. Go check it out, patreon.com/goingofftrack, or you can also get there via links on our website.
Hello and welcome to Going Off Track.
Hello.
What's happening?
Oh, man. Summer's over.
Summer's over.
Sorry.
Yes.
It was, I had a good summer. I saw the eclipse.
You did?
Did I tell you about this?
No.
Wow. Do you want to hear about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're at the point where people are not sick of hearing eclipse stories. They might be like, why are you guys talking about this? But at least you probably haven't heard about this in a while. So let's do it.
What day was the eclipse? Was like on a Monday, right? So
yes, it was on a Monday.
On Thursday morning, I looked over my wife's shoulder and she was at her laptop and she was looking at rental cars and she's like, you know, it's really cheap to rent a car right now for the week. And I was like, are you? And the night before I had been thinking about the eclipse, I completely dismissed it. And then like I read something by somebody maybe on Wired and, you know, they were talking about how this hadn't happened in 100 years. And I'm thinking like, wow, maybe this really is like a big deal and I should take the kids to it. And so I was like, I said, are you doing what I think you're doing? You want to try to go? And she's like, yeah. And so we like, we're just, it's the most spontaneous I think we've been since we got married. Oh, please.
Brad has a landline, which is very impressive.
I'm going to edit that out. and we fucking did it, dude. We drove down to Tennessee where my cousins live.
Nice.
And then we actually ended up going into Northwest Georgia to actually see. And dude, it was...
Did you get those glasses or whatever?
Yeah, we got the glasses. But so I'm not going to... Yeah, everybody's heard enough about the fucking eclipse, although now it's... 2 months later, but it was intense. It went to nighttime. It was nighttime. It was like the difference between being right in the totality and being, you know, just barely outside of it is literally night and day. The crickets and stuff came out.
That's so wild.
Yeah. Like right before it went dark, it went dead silent. Like all the daytime, like insects, cause we were out in the country, stopped. Traffic completely stopped. Like, you don't really even realize, you don't even know. We were in the country and couldn't even see any roads. But afterwards, I realized that, you know, that there was some traffic noises in the background. But when about a minute before the eclipse, it went dead silent. No insects, no traffic, nothing. And then once it cut, and then it just cut to darkness, like night, like fully like night. And the insects started like night, like crickets and frogs that make noise at night started making noise.
What idiots.
Anyway, that's my big summer story. Yeah, it was a blast.
I didn't really see it. I was in a wedding in LA, and they had like a brunch on Monday morning. And I was
well, you
there.
Have to be. This is what I'm saying is like you have to. If you're not in the totality, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's someone had the glasses at this party, and so like I looked up and I was like, "Yeah, something looks weird."
Yeah.
And then I was like, "I'm gonna get some more coffee now." And yeah.
No, so, I was in nighttime. It was night.
Yeah. I'll see the next one in 100 years, whatever.
Actually, the next one's in like 7 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. After 100 years, the next one's going to come through New York State in like 7 years.
Perfect. So, yeah, I'll start planning that soon.
We'll have a party.
Yes. Today on the podcast, very exciting episode. We have Vinny Caruna and Brandon Riley from The Movie Life. They have a new record that just came out on September 22nd. On Rise Records, it is called Cities in Search of a Heart. And it's a very good record. I wrote the bio for it, actually.
Is that a disclaimer?
I mean, I'm just saying I've listened to the record a lot. So I'm a trusted name. And I think the record's good. And yeah, they are actually on the road now. They are in the midst of a full U.S. tour. I'm trying to think. Yeah, they're doing the whole U.S. and they're going down playing the Fest in Gainesville. Sadly, United Nations is not playing it this year, but they'll be playing there on October 29th. I'm sure that'll be a crazy show. And then in November, they're doing, looks like, a week of shows in the U.K., which is very cool. And those shows are with Wallflower. They're also doing a bunch of shows with Racquet Club, one of my favorite new bands.
There you go.
Featuring the whole, yeah, this is, yeah, all the West Coast shows. Movie Life is doing with Racquet Club, which is Blair from Knapsack and Gel Sound, Sergi from Sam Am and Knapsack's band, who are very excellent. And then the East Coast, they have this band Heart Attack Man opening, who I haven't heard, but apparently are very good. So check out the new Movie Life record, Cities in Search of a Heart. And now you can listen to this interview with Vinny and Brandon about the record, because that's the whole point of the podcast. So enjoy.
No, Squeeze is coming, but we're going to be on tour. I was really looking forward to it. And Psychedelic Furs while I'm on tour.
Really?
It's like two of my favorite bands.
Yeah, yeah. That's
might,
wild.
Maybe won't put on a good show anymore, but I would definitely go if I was home, though.
I saw them last year, and it was good.
I saw a really good Squeeze show.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw the Psychedelic Furs?
They were, like, back together again.
They keep doing
they
that.
They played in, okay, I played in, like, this a solo show in the small room. And they were playing the big room in the observatory in Santa Ana.
Oh, yeah.
And it was very good. It's cool. Good. And everybody was, like, their guitar player is insanely
Yeah, I was
tasty.
Being very cynical. I'm sure that is...
No, it was good. It was good.
You don't know what... Do you know what the lineup was? Because...
I'm not familiar with the members of the band.
I'm not either.
He might be the guitar player. Lives in my neighborhood. And he's younger. He's not from the original band.
I watched from the balcony because it was, like... Our dressing room hallway was connected to the balcony of the big room.
Nice.
So I just watched, like, kind of walked down there. So he did look younger.
Yeah.
And, like...
The Squeeze does the same
long
thing
there.
Yeah, I think so.
Skinny dude?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was real tasty, like, really... He was actually the guy where I was like, oh, they're
not bad.
Yeah. And the singer was good. You know, he was good.
He's always had, like, a... Sort of punky.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
Not like that demanding voice. For him, yeah. I don't think. He just kind of...
We had that same thing happen. We played that small room in the observatory, and there were all these kids outside, and we were like, oh my God, the show's going to be awesome. And then Julian Casablancas was playing the big room. Yeah. No one's there to see us.
Oh, oh, what, solo or with the...
He was doing some kind of like weird like world music thing. All these guys were in like weird outfits. It was really bad.
Yeah.
I thought it was bad.
I feel like Blake Schwarzenbach got the Psychedelic Furs thing. Like, that's where he got his inspiration for his...
Really?
Where he took his vocal approach.
I never
Sometimes
thought about that.
Sometimes they sound like the same person, to me, at least.
I've never listened to them very much,
and
to be honest.
The plot thickens because Jawbreaker covered Into You Like a Train, which is a Psychedelic Furs song, which kind of leads me to believe that, yes, maybe he was going for that a little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a good cover. It's one of those things where it's almost like I like it better than the real version.
Interesting. Yeah, I never heard that.
Yeah, check it out.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, I like his voice.
Yeah.
Richard Butler,
super cool.
Yeah. How are we going? Are we good to go?
We've been going, man.
Oh, gotcha.
Cool. Use this. This is great.
Yeah. Sorry, Julian.
I like it. Sorry, Julian. Everyone else, we said good things, right?
Yeah. It's all right. He'll get over it.
I'm also a listener of the podcast, so I know how you guys do.
Okay. And a former guest on the podcast.
Yes, former guest.
How long ago were you? You were probably on a while ago. It was at Rubber Tracks.
It was when I was promoting my solo record.
Okay.
So it must have been last spring.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I walked there.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was you and Benny.
Okay.
And it was awesome.
That checks out.
It's like my favorite
interview.
Yeah. It's, you have to excuse me. Like, my ears are obviously fucked because I've been doing this for almost 20 years. And I'm definitely hearing the ringing in my ears being in this quiet ass room.
Dude, I was on this vacation all last week and I was in this cabin in Canada and I hadn't noticed it in so long. And then I was like, oh my God, it's really bad.
The silence is deafening.
Yeah.
it's kind of like exacerbated today because I have terrible allergies and the allergies are making it weirder.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
You'll have to speak up.
Yeah, should we put on some white noise or something? Or a fan?
Some headphones?
No.
We never do headphones.
No.
We could.
So, there's a new movie, Life Record?
Yeah. That's news.
That's pretty exciting. I've heard it a lot.
So what do you think?
I think it's good. I mean, you know, I wrote the bio, so I interviewed you guys about it for the record.
Yes, you did.
But yeah, so we had talked about what I think is interesting. So Brandon, you live in Tarrytown.
Yeah.
And Vinny, you live in Greenpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So could you talk a little bit about maybe sort of how the record kind of came together or how you guys, because I feel like, it's hard to get in the same room as someone as an adult. Like, how big of a challenge was that, I guess, to just coordinate?
Coordinating it was... easy because, well, it would have been harder if you weren't still working in the city at the time.
Yeah, I had quit my job, which made everything a lot easier as far as committing to getting together with Vinny to write music. But basically, we would just carve out like 3 days a week where we would just go for like a half a day, basically. And I would go to him, I'd drive out to him, or he'd come out to me, and we would just sit in a room for hours and just write.
But you know, when we started, he was still working in the city, and so he would come over after work, and then he'd go home. So that was like the way it started. But I mean, the way it really started was like we were playing reunion shows, and you know, eventually we were buds again. And I mean, not that we weren't buds, but we were in each other's lives again regularly. So we were kind of like, you know. Makes sense. Let's see what it sounds like to write music together, and let's not talk to anybody about it for a while, and let's just see how it goes. And here we are with a record that's coming out in September. And I mean, writing in my living room and then writing in a friend of Brandon's in Tarrytown has a practice space, and he would let us go in there. And we would just practice like right at the Tarrytown train station. There's a little warehouse. And we would just write there too. So change the scenery back and forth and just kind of get it together.
So like, but like, how did you kind of flush out the songs? Like, when did you add like drums and that kind of stuff? Like, how does that,
the way we
was that
demoed,
later?
The way we demo with the rat who produced it, Brett Romnes, we call him the rat. That's his nickname. We developed a demo. He plays drums and I am the Avalanche, and we made a few records with him producing as well. And we developed a demo method where once the songs are together, record guitars to a click, record bass, and then he programs the drums over the guitars and bass and then sing over that.
So, okay. And that was in batch. That was done in batches, basically. So, you know, we'd be like, all right, we have five songs. Let's demo them, you know, and then we demo them and listen and be like, you know, either rearrange them or just say that's not good at all or this is really good. Let's not even touch it. And then we'd get back to writing more songs and we'd do like another batch of, you know, half a dozen. And that was pretty much the method.
It's a good way to do it for anyone like listening that's like
you know, we can't make noise here. We can't, you know, you can do it anywhere. Mm-hmm. We do it in my apartment where I have, you know, neighbors on each side of me and below me. And so the nobody ever hears anything because the guitar, there's no amps. The guitars are, you know, we're getting putting the guitar straight through the computer.
So the record was written and recorded with ever playing the songs live in a practice space.
Wow. That's true. Yeah. We never played as a band still yet.
But right. Yeah, we've been doing that for a long time. So we're really good at it now. So
that's wild.
Yeah. So I mean, that's like the New York City way to do it. And obviously it's, you know, you don't have to rent out a studio and get drum sounds and do all the things that don't really matter because no one's going to hear it anyway.
And just trying to align a full band's schedule basically is just, yeah, would be like grueling.
So are you saying you recorded the final guitars in your bedroom?
No. That was all the demos, and that's how we knew what the record was.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's nasty at programming drums, and we got all our drum sounds from Brian McTernan's I'm the Avalanche recorded a record, recorded drums in Brian McTernan's drum room in his studio in Fells Point, Baltimore. And so we have all the samples from his drum sounds in his drum room. So those are the drum sounds, and he's super slick with the programming. So right, it sounds super real.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're showing a label or anybody else the demos, they're like, wow, this sounds like a record.
Right.
You know, because we're playing a Les Paul through a fake Marshall. And,
right.
You know.
No, you can do it. If you have, you know, there's actually little tricks how to add, you know, the guys that are good at it, they know how to add mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
totally.
That's how they get away with it.
Yeah.
And no, you can definitely.
Yeah, but as far as the album itself, we, you know, yeah, all through amps and right, mic'd cabinets and things like that.
And then live, are you guys trying to figure, as Fozzy was playing with you guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Matt Fozzy's been playing bass for us.
Nice.
Which is amazing. The guys, you could do way worse as far as a dude who's going to like learn all your songs and play them really well.
He just seems so really down, nice though. He's not really friendly. He's just always like, oh.
Well, that's the downside, is that
yeah,
he's a terrible person.
He's a huge asshole, but
and his dog really is ugly.
Yeah,
and
totally. He doesn't have cool hair.
No, it's like, he's like a, but it, he makes up for it with his technical abilities.
Yeah, he's
he learned, you know, whatever, 18 songs that he had to learn and came into the studio and technically within an hour we were good, but we wanted to take more time just to make sure that we weren't like dreaming or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I know, because I still wanted to work things out for myself, but he was in there and he was just solid.
We could have played yeah, a show without practicing. That's how, like, actually he was really terrible and he's with us now, so
oh yeah, he's not
nobody
he got a lot
ideas
worse since he yeah joined our band, so.
Yeah, he's gotten not worse, and he's kind of, we're just kind of gonna just ride him till the wheels fall off.
Yeah, smart.
Keep him to ourselves.
So for this tour you'll be playing a lot of these songs, I guess, live for the first time.
Yeah, and we haven't played any of them live.
That's wild. How does that feel?
Exciting.
Right now it feels okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, honestly, I mean, I know that Brandon's going to have it. I know that Rat, I mean, he made the record. He played on the record.
You just know everyone's going to have it.
I know the words.
Professional, so.
And Fozzy's going to show up like he always does, super pro, so we're good.
We'll rehearse for a few days and go on.
But it's exciting. I mean, we're going to play songs. We have more songs to put in the set list now.
Yeah.
And they're good, I think. We think. We're positive that it's good. So we have to like go out there and do it. And I'm excited. Like, I've been taking a big break from the record because I don't want to get sick of myself or us. And I listened to the next song that we're going to premiere this morning when I woke up, because I got like a email about it or something. And I thought, yeah, it's still good. Like, you know. It's, you know, it's scary to come back. It's not scary. It's just, you don't know. Even if you did make the best record of all time, that still doesn't mean anyone has time for it. You know?
Right, right.
They might like want to just listen to S-Town or something, or maybe they're just like, I'm good. You know, I have my movie life songs that I like. I don't need any more of them.
Right, know? Right. Mm-hmm.
So all we could do is just make a killer record and hope that there's some people that it moves, you know, and kind of like gets under their skin.
I don't know if you want to talk about this, but
we have to.
All right. I know, like, you've done some of, like, the emo night stuff or the emo stuff. Do you not want to talk about this?
I thought we were going to do a separate podcast about this.
podcast?
That might need a separate podcast.
me and Jonah were having a beer and were we having a beer?
We were having a meal.
We
were having lobster rolls. Ooh. Yeah. It was
lobster
rolls.
Corn on the cob. Lobster joint.
Yeah. It's very good.
I was most certainly having a beer. And, and we got on the topic of emo night. Yeah, so sometimes singers of bands that who don't know how to DJ get asked to DJ sometimes because I don't know, that's a thing. And
yeah.
Sometimes when these nights happen, the bands that they're playing, the bands that they're DJing, like, draw less people than the event of of like the 1500 people that come out to an emo night. And it's funny, it's really funny, crazy stuff. But I've had some crazy experiences. So they asked me to do LA emo night,
which is like I think it's like a really big one, right?
It was really big.
Yeah.
And there was like a line down the block of people that couldn't get in, and they asked me to play 4 songs acoustic, which was a bad idea because it was a party. And it was filled with people who don't know my music because I don't know, I feel like, you know, Movie Life's an older band. I feel like a lot of our, at least, you know, a good portion of our fans are like a little older and maybe aren't going to emo night, and some of them definitely are. I mean, I ran into a lot of them, but I mean, the LA emo night was interesting. It was really cool that they asked me to do it, and I'm glad I did it, but it was funny, like, I played, like, I didn't know what to play. And I wasn't going to play music that I didn't like. And I'm not going to say what bands I don't like.
How are you going to play emo, then?
Well, first of all, emo night, to me, means, all right, so then we're going to do Promise Ring,
right,
and Mineral, and
totally.
June of 44, and, like, I would even play, like, Heroin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, or anything in between.
That sounds like a great night to me.
Let's do that. Let's do that. Let's not call it.
Yeah.
So, but I got an idea of what was going on, and I was like, all right, well, I'll play my buds. You know, I played Saves the Day, which I think went well, but I played like an old Saves the Day, so it was super fast. So people are like, oh, I don't know this. I played Thursday and some people responded. I played Glassjaw. Nobody really responded. I think I played Piebald. Basically bands that we came up with and who I like.
Basically all East Coast bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
That's a good point.
And it was bad. And I got a sense. It wasn't bad, but people were just kind of like, okay, when are they going to play Taking Back Sunday and Brand New? That was really it. And I remember playing a Brand New song. I didn't actually, not in LA. I learned that. But basically, no, but I tell you, we had to do a different podcast for this. It's long.
Okay.
So,
basically,
I gathered what Emo Night was about, which is basically play as much Brand New and Taking Back Sunday as possible, and everyone will sing along, and the people that put it on will make shitloads of money. Brand New and Taking Back Sunday will make none of it. And fucking job done.
Right.
So, but so I didn't do that in LA. So as soon as I saw that, and I'm not saying I don't like Brand New and Taking Back Sunday, they're both very good bands. So I was just like, well, this isn't going well. And everyone freaking out, like before I went on, we're like freaking out to like Drake and stuff. And I was like, this isn't emo night. This is just a club night filled with kids that kind of went to like, you know, they got into My Chemical Romance and maybe Dashboard Confessional. But this is not emo night. Like, and as soon as I figured that out, I flipped it and I put on fucking I put on McConan. Do you know that dude?
No.
He's like a trap artist, like experimental trap artist, and he had like a few songs. You ever heard the song Club Going Up on a Tuesday?
Yes.
That's McConan.
Okay.
Featuring Drake. So I put on a McConan song that I actually liked, that really, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And everything changed. The whole place was like, and I was like, okay, so now I get it.
So they don't want old emo. They don't want new emo. They want no emo.
They want you to just, they want an emo guy to DJ club music to them.
There it is.
Right. And it was a party, and I get that. But then there was like, you know, certain emo songs maybe that I didn't think of. Emo. I fucking, you know, certain pseudo commercial, pseudo punk pop music that I didn't think of. I was like, oh, that's emo. That's the emo that these people think are is
right.
Emo.
Like, yeah, like Steven did one in New York, and yeah, it's like you play like a Paramore song and people like lose their minds. Mm-hmm. And I would never think of that. Like, and I don't want to turn into like old guy, like this is an emo. Like, it was emo when I was.
But seriously, come on.
But yeah.
But it was more of a party, like a club night than that. And that's cool. And it was, and like for, you know, I'm 37, so I wouldn't be caught dead ever going to a party like that. But everyone else there was having a great time, and the people in the LA emo night were super cool to me, and it was awesome.
Yeah, we should also probably just make it clear that it was LA. Steven just got back.
Yes. Yes.
That's a big factor.
But then, but then, I got asked to do the Glamour Kills party, like an anniversary party, which is a clothing line of buds.
Yeah, Marky's like, been on the podcast.
Yeah, Marky. Is awesome. He said, we're doing a party, you want you to DJ. I said, that's awesome, I'm super down. When I got there, I put together an entire set, because you need to have like a playlist, or at least I learned that, like, you know, you download the fake DJ program,
right?
And then you like mix it. There's like two fake turntables. Yeah. And I learned, you know, I have to have those songs ready to go. Like, if the Wi-Fi is fucked up, I can't just do it off of Spotify. I put together a set, like, with my now wife the night before. The sickest fucking set of hip-hop music. Because it was a party, and it was in New York City.
Sure.
Okay? I'm, like, getting defensive about it. So, so I show up. I do sound check to make sure I know what I'm doing, because I've only DJed once before at LA Emo Night, and it didn't go well. And I get up, and the two people before me, it was the singer of We Are the In Crowd. She played like Taking Back Sunday Brand New and Taking Back Sunday and Brand New. And then one of the dudes from All Time Low played, you know, other stuff that you would imagine would be at an emo night of that kind. And I was like, uh-oh. And I went up and I did my set. I don't know what to do while I'm standing on stage. As I know how to hold a microphone and sing my own songs.
Right.
I went into like the sickest set of all time. I know it was, because every single security guard at Webster Hall, after I got off, after I cleared half the room out, they were like, we got to get you back here. That was the best fucking set of all time. I put in like new stuff that I don't necessarily like, but I also put in like Dipset, like Tribe, De La Soul, stuff that I'm into. And they fucking loved it. And all my friends that work at Webster Hall were texting me being like, everyone's freaking out about how good you were. At the same time, I realized that this wasn't just a Glamour Kills party. Emo Night Brooklyn had been a part of it, and they introduced themselves to me, those guys, who are very nice guys as well. But they do a similar thing. Well, no, I guess they don't. It's less of a club night and more of like a Taking Back Sunday, Brand New, Blink 182,
right,
everyone's
right.
singing along.
Yeah, that's the thing Steven did.
Yeah.
And which is fun for everyone.
Sure.
And, but like, it's probably not something I would do, you know, like, so that was the thing. They were bummed because I met them right before I went on stage in the dressing room. He's like, it's really cool you're here. Like, we're from Brooklyn Emo Night. I'm like, what's that? I'm like, oh, where are you from? And they're like, not Brooklyn. And I was just like, oh, cool, cool. Well, I'm doing a fucking, a whole set of hip hop. And they left. And I was like, no, I'm doing a whole set of hip hop. And they were like, well, as long as you like put in like Justin Bieber every once in a while and like it'll be cool, like people will like that and stuff. And then I left and then I realized that they weren't joking. So that's how that night went. and everyone seemed pretty bummed. And then I went home. So I inadvertently played Emo Night Brooklyn. I didn't know I would have definitely played Glassjaw on Thursday
right.
my buds again. And that probably would have went over well, maybe. Anyway, and then they asked me to do Long Island Emo Night, and I didn't want to. But anytime anyone's like, yeah, come out here, we're going to pay you money, you know, drinks on us, you know, and it takes me like 10 minutes to get there, I'm just like, yeah. And then Long Island Emo Night, I learned my lesson. I'm not playing any hip hop. Showed up to Long Island Emo Night. I played Dashboard, Who's Our Homie. I played Dashboard. People were kind of like, yeah, whatever. I played a brand new song, but it wasn't like one of their big hits. It was like my favorite brand new song. People were like, whatever. I played Get Up Kids, like what I think is like a big Get Up Kids song. Nobody responded. Nobody responded to Glassjaw. Same situation. Like, I don't know what these people want. And then Sal, it was at Amityville Music Hall, Sal from the band The Sleeping, he owns the place, and he came up with a big glass of whiskey, and he's like, this fucking sucks, man. And Jake, it was a whole thing. Jake from East Coast Collective and stuff, he like booked it, and he's like, I don't know how I feel about all this. Like Emo Night stuff. And I'm like, do your thing, man. It's like a good thing. It's a club night that you're doing and you're going to make money and it's cool and everyone's happy. Just don't ask me to do it again, is what I told him, and he didn't. Anyway, Sal came up with a big glass of whiskey and there were some kids in the front row that were like fans of my bands and fans of Movie Life and Avalanche, clearly. Like they were like saying what's up and like, it's fucking awesome you're here. Those people turned on me because... Sal came up with a big glass of whiskey and he's just like, yo, stop playing, like just fucking play hip hop. And I was like, dude, I can't play hip hop. I've been through this before. Like, this is actually a nightmare. Like, this is the kind of nightmare I have, like being on stage and having everyone hate me. And I started playing hip hop because I drank the whole glass of whiskey and was just like, fuck it, you're right, man. Let's just like blow this out. Like, let's just have fun. I started playing hip hop and people started getting really bummed. And those people that were like, knew who I was and like, were like happy I was there. One dude was like super drunk and I was playing like good hip hop and everybody was bummed. And he was literally, I had a guy like 5 feet away from me at Amityville Music Hall that was once my fan like 2 minutes before that. Just yelling the word, words, play emo. Play emo! Play emo! What are you doing?
This is the darkest fucking story. This is one of the darkest stories I've ever heard. I've only heard pieces of all of this and I didn't hear it in entirety.
I put myself through it three fucking times.
Well, fast forward to 2 months ago.
Blood money.
I got asked to DJ an emo brunch. Probably not even the same affiliates, but I got asked to do it. I heard like the Kirby Enthusiasm song like in the sky. And I was like, nope. Not going to do it. I turned it down. I didn't even know what the offer was. Or anything. I just said no. I said I can't do it.
The fuck?
fuck is an emo brunch?
It's going to be the same. It's the same thing Vince went through. It's going to be the same exact thing.
It was like the emo. It was like an emo rendition of the Curb Your Enthusiasm song.
Like a whinier Curb Your Enthusiasm song.
Let me clarify, there's
people that are going to be fucking mad at me about telling these stories, right?
I don't know. I feel like you've been very diplomatic about it. I think so.
Just because I say everyone's nice. Everyone is nice.
That's what I always do too.
But it's true.
Fun. I think it's something with the culture. It's not like against any like person.
No.
It's a cult.
This should be going on, and everyone that's deriving any joy from it should. And anyone that's making money off it should too. Because they're throwing a party and people are coming. Just don't ask me to do it. And if you do, just know what you're getting into. Because I don't know what I'm doing.
Because you're going to accept.
Because next time I'll be like, all right, I'm going to play everything all these people want to hear. And then I won't know what they want to hear. I'll never get it right. So I'll never do it again. So, you know, it's hard to get an offer from your booking agent where it's like, oh, you don't even have to play the show. You just show up and sip drinks and play music
right off
of your iPad. And it's like, well, how the fuck can I turn that down?
Yeah.
Because I was in LA and they knew I was, so they grabbed me. Like, we were playing that festival.
And also, how do you fuck that up, right?
How do you fuck that up? You're not going to fuck it up more than once.
I mean, I DJed last night. I don't DJ that much. But I had the experience where it was a crowded bar, like a cool bar, and just no one cared what I was playing. And that was like, I just felt like I was sort of like invisible.
That's liberating.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. But I was like, I can do whatever. But it was also sort of like, I wish more of my friends had come so I could like talk
it's
to
like
them.
Like a strange euphoria.
Yeah, I was like, people are kind of looking at me and I can't tell if they like this or hate it. I'm playing like Polvo.
What Polvo song did you play?
I was playing a lot of stuff off like later stuff off like Siberia and like in prisons. Like I like
a good night.
I thought it was cool.
I couldn't make it. I saw you posted it on Instagram.
Yeah.
I couldn't come last night. That's the only reason I didn't. I had a soccer game last night.
I kept thinking someone was going to come up to me at one point and be like, dude, I totally get what you're doing. Like, I've never heard this kind of music in a bar. Like, this is like, this made my night. And one girl was like, I like what you're doing. It's really cool. I was like, oh, thanks. And she's like, hey, I need to charge my phone. Like,
she didn't really care what you were doing. Yeah, she needed to charge her phone.
It was like so qualifying. Yeah. Like, how are you? Anyways.
But usually you do get that one person, right? Every time you DJ, that shot in the arm, go.
Yeah.
You're doing great.
And I saw a couple guys like nodding their head. I was like, this guy's into it. I was like, oh no, this guy's like drunk and trying to get laid. Like, he 100% doesn't care about this. But
DJing is not easy, man.
Brad did it for years in East Village.
The gigs like that where you're kind of just background music, those are easy. I mean, unless you just fucking fuck up.
What kind of
DJing
were you?
But when people are watching you.
Yeah, what were you spinning? Brad, you were spinning at Niagara stuff, right?
I was going to say, like, one of the people that I learned a lot about DJing from was Max Schubert from Swingin' Utters.
Okay.
And Max used to do, because I was doing Upstairs, which was like people looking to get to fuck other people. Right. But even that was difficult because I had to keep the vibe up, you know? But Max was downstairs where it was a dance party. And like, that was a lot of pressure because I would fill in for him when he couldn't do it. And dude, I fucking sweated the whole like 4 hours or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
Had to play the right.
You
song,
gotta keep
right?
the room on, man. Like, and it's not always. It's you know, a lot of times it was cheesy shit. You know, you know the hits, but
stuff you don't want to play.
Yeah,
like you want to.
You gotta swallow your pride pretty quick, and you gotta play the fucking Justin Bieber, but.
Right.
But then you can drop in the old shit. Like I would, you know, I'm a huge fan of like 90s hip hop. And like, if you pick the right tune, you can drop that stuff in there. It's
with
just, you got to
right
know
crowd,
when to do
right?
it. Yeah. But that the thing is, what Max taught me, which was really good, is like when you put a song on, you know, as soon as it starts, you know, before the room reacts that you just made a mistake. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Did you experience that? Mm-hmm. And what he would do, what Max would do, is
PTSD.
And me, like, I come from like a producer background where I'm like, okay, man, like this isn't working, but maybe I'll fade it a little bit, like after the first chorus.
What if I flange it? Oh no, it's getting worse.
I gotta like maybe I can mix in another song. Like Max was like, Max would be like, he dropped it, and he goes, ah, that's not right. Boom, and he would just fucking drop. He would just cut to the next.
He would just go
like not even pretty. He'd just be like, "Fuck that, that didn't work."
Yeah, but as long as it was the right song and you know, like
as long as the next song was better,
The thing Brad taught me too about DJing was he was like, if anyone asks you for a request, just say yes, and then just don't play it. Right. Just say yes.
That's amazing.
Like Max too.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
but he was way more cold hearted about it than me. Like I would always say that, and then half the time I would play it.
Yeah,
he would never fucking play it.
I have a question from a friend. We do this segment called Mystery Friend, where we have a friend of you guys ask a question, you have to answer it, or. We need
background.
It's a friend of ours?
A friend of yours, yeah. Specifically, definitely a friend of yours. I think probably a friend of yours.
Okay.
So
it's got to remain a mystery.
It's going to remain a mystery, but you have to guess who it is after this.
Oh, great. I love that. That's awesome.
So we have one question. It's actually about, I think this might be about Brandon's, so your solo EP.
Okay.
It's crowdfunded.
Yeah.
What were some of the weirdest or biggest requests to come through as a result? Did you have some kind of...
It was all pretty controlled.
Okay.
So I think if anything, some of my offers were weird, but none of the requests were weird. Like some of the things that you can do was pen pals. So I'm a pen pal with about half a dozen people that we're going to do like five exchanges each. And then there's a pledge for a drawing by my son, and you just request whatever you want him to draw, basically, and he draws it.
That's a really good idea, all this stuff.
That is really good.
So 5 letters each back and forth for the pen pal, so you need to bring the relationship to a close on the last one.
This has been fun.
There's a few things I didn't even think through. I mean, my home address is.
But if you
I don't have a PO box.
Connections with these people, then you can just continue it for a while.
Yeah, maybe through email though, because these are handwritten and.
Oh, it's analog.
I trust me, all
analog.
I think it's special that way, but it's, you know, it's a lot of work. I'm still doing it. I was doing work before I came here. With that, and I'll be doing more when I leave here because I have to deliver by the deadline. And there's some cover songs that I'm doing that I have to do on Saturday, and I'm like going to Italy the next day. So
it's a
ton of work. It was wildly successful, but it's also a ton of work. And in the future, I might have to reevaluate how I would do that again.
It's
with
hard.
Regards to like time management,
right?
Because it started affecting. Other areas of my life.
You might end up just getting minimum wage for this.
I almost got divorced.
Hourly.
Yeah, it's so much work, but it's been a beautiful experience though.
Yeah. It's hard to think of incentives that aren't just like, well, thank you, or like, you know.
I had to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
And then we also did disposable camera shots of like behind the scenes in the studio and
So they're exclusive.
Very analog. Very like
nice.
You know,
I like it.
Yeah.
You should have recorded reel to reel. Keep it all analog.
I would have had to
fund
would have triple the amount of money probably.
Yeah, it's hard to write letters too. Like I've been trying to write my journal. Like my hand just cramps
and
up.
You can't spell anymore.
I can't spell anything.
I did handwritten lyric sheets. I'm looking at it right now.
Blister.
I had to do like 20-something handwritten lyric sheets.
Wow. Because really, I mean, aside from jotting something down, holding a pen for that?
Never.
Yeah.
That's nobody.
It's immediately raw. Like it's raw after the first two songs are written out. And I put a Band-Aid over it. I'm just like.
But that, do you think it's just you're out of press? Like I never felt that way in high school.
No, because guitar playing. You build up immunity, a callus.
You've been doing it from like age 2, man, with crayons.
Your skin changes there, you know, when you're doing it all the time, like with guitar playing. But then if you don't write anything with a pen for years, like I remember writing rent checks, just being like, whoa. That hurt.
Yeah. I noticed that my writing, when I write anything longer than a couple words, it just turns to crap.
It's total. And that's another thing of like focusing was trying to like remember just how to write the letters of the English language.
A, B, C.
Oh my God. Who do you think asked that question?
So it's a friend of mine?
Yeah.
Who asked what's the most
friends
unusual...
like these?
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
You need more than
that's
that.
A very vague
that's
question.
So vague. All right,
they have what a bad follow- friend.
They have a follow up question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are any Nightmare View songs about Pete Wentz?
No.
No. Does that give any insight into might be who might be asking this? There's one more question.
Yeah, well, give me one more. I think I might be able to do it.
Fuck, marry, kill. Liam Gallagher, Damon Albarn, and Paul Banks.
Is Sarah Lewittin?
Yes.
I want to answer that question. Who is it again?
Damon. Damon Albarn. Damon, Paul Banks, or Liam Gallagher? You guys should both answer it.
I want to marry Damon Albarn. Fuck Paul Banks and kill Liam Gallagher. Not, I mean, just
right.
Nothing against him, but I had someone had to die.
Yeah,
so he's
true. It'll
be him. I'm a blur guy all the way. So,
gotcha.
Damon seem I would marry Damon. I mean, he seems like the most level headed of.
Like, he's got a head on
seems
his shoulders.
Like a guy. I mean, we can have a chat with him.
Yeah, he's kind of seems
he
like he's a little.
I would fuck Liam, I guess, because I don't want him to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, kill Paul.
Yeah, someone's got to die.
That's the only reason. I really like. I'm an Oasis guy.
Liam on Twitter.
I'm an
Liam
Oasis
Gallagher
guy. As much as
I don't want to kill Liam because his Twitter is fucking.
Really, I haven't seen it.
It's incredible, incredible.
Really?
It's so funny.
I like Blur and Oasis equally, so I'm like, you know. I was right in the middle. I wasn't part of
and there's like
the
no,
rivalry.
I never understood, you know, they don't even remotely sound the same. I never understood the...
I think they were both just Britpop bands, and I think it was probably invented very wisely by the press and both of them, maybe.
Yeah, well,
they
were definitely both perpetuated it.
And they were both ripping off the Beatles, but like in different ways, mm-hmm. different eras and different...
But Blur was like writing lyrics that meant stuff, and Oasis was just writing
well, what rhymes
melodies.
With, what rhymes
that,
with hair? You
who
know?
Cares what lyrics there are? You gonna sing along?
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like you've ever had a rivalry? Probably not. Maybe
with another band,
or with like another scene or something.
I think we did a fairly good job at staying out of that kind
yeah.
of stuff.
I don't think so. I mean, growing up in a hardcore scene, which we both did. I mean, in Long Island hardcore scene, which is different. I mean, it's not just hardcore. It's kind of a lot of stuff. But the vibe was super unity style.
Yeah.
It wasn't like competitive or anything. Everybody was just surprised at how much of the rest of the world was listening to all of us Long Island bands.
Yes.
Is interesting. So no, I don't think so.
Everyone loves Silent Majority. That was
yeah.
like the first
well,
thing
kind
I
of
learned.
Were
when
the,
I...
you know, responsible for
yeah.
all of those bands sort of at least stepping stone, like jumping off. I think we were all sort of ripping that off sonically until we all found our own sounds.
Yeah, Brand New, Taking Back Sunday, Glassjaw, Movie Life, Crime and Stereo, and everyone else. We're all in the crowd. At every Silent Majority show, like
every show,
we may have not even been in those bands yet, but
yeah.
all the members of those bands that were from Long Island were in the crowd singing along to Silent Majority. They were that important to, like, in our formative years.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's kind of strange because I went to school in Ithaca and they would come through and I would see them like Life of Spectator era, and I thought they were great too. But it's weird to have a band that's so influential on so many big bands that isn't super well known all over. I mean, I think they're respected everywhere, but you know, like I think if they played in the West Coast, it definitely wouldn't be the same as, you know what I mean?
I think there's like 20, 30, 40, 50 hardcore kids in each bigger market that found out about them, you know what I mean? In other markets. Like I think we've talked about this before, you and I, like I don't know what it is. There's a reason. Like, you could probably get to the bottom of why... I mean, they didn't tour. That's one thing.
Okay.
They toured a bit, but not when anyone was going to shows.
I think we maybe did the only big tour that they've ever done.
Yeah, I mean, we toured with them. They took us out for like 3 weeks. Yeah, probably 99.
2000.
I know they did a tour with
they did the tour with Indecision and Milhouse. Remember that?
Yeah.
Excuse me, excuse my burping.
They were always on, I mean, I know they were always kind of on a Long Island label, and they never did, they were never a full-time band, and maybe that had something to do with not.
But it might have been that era too, like it never, like they broke up before things started to spread on the internet,
right,
and things like that. I don't know, because it's crazy, like how, I mean, every show they played when they got back together, like last year?
I think this and...
It sold out in a second.
Right, I remember that.
And that's amazing.
Did you go to the Vita show or any of the shows?
I was away for every show. Sure. I couldn't make any show. So, and I was speaking with Ryan from Silent Majority about it, kind of like just making sure they were going to do another one. But who knows if I'll be home for that too.
Yeah.
You know? But I think the door's kind of slightly open for that for them, but I mean, we're putting a record out in September and we're gonna be busy as shit, so
I'm sure. And you guys are going out with that early November?
Yeah. Yep. We're doing a US tour with early November, like co-headlining. We got Racquet Club. We were talking about Racquet Club.
Oh my
Club.
God.
We got
I
Racquet
love
Club
Racquet
to
Club.
Do half of it.
No way.
It's so cool. It's, I'm so stoked.
Racquet Club is half of Texas and west towards west, is that what it is? Yeah.
Are they doing New York? No, they're doing the other half of the states.
All
right, I went out to LA for their first show. I'll come out. Yeah.
It'll be Troubadour. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So us in early November and Racquet Club are doing Troubadour.
Nice.
It's very special. Love, you know, I'm a Knapsack, Sam I Am dude.
Yes.
So I pushed really hard for Racquet Club. And so they're doing half the tour, you know, splitting it up. I would love for them to be on the whole tour, but we just didn't. We wanted to do a 3-band bill.
Right. That makes sense.
So we compromised and, you know. But at the same time, it actually is really cool because Heart Attack Man is doing the other half. And when we were sent submissions for the tour, Racquet Club was me and Brandon's number one choice, and Heart Attack Man was our second choice.
Sweet.
So when early November was like, we really want to do Heart Attack Man, we were like, well, we like them too.
So it was like perfect democracy at work there.
Yeah,
they got their number one and we got our number one.
Yeah.
And then we split it down the middle. And so.
Yeah, that part of it was like really easy.
I haven't heard Heart Attack Man.
They're cool.
They're good.
Yeah,
they're good. I mean, I imagine they're younger dudes.
Yeah.
But they're good. Basically, we just wanted, like, you know, something fresh. And I thought, I mean, Racquet Club is a brand new band. They're not 20 years old, but they're fucking awesome.
Yes.
And there's no way that group of guys is going to make anything that's not amazing. And, now all the songs I've heard from them are fucking awesome. So, I mean, we're looking forward to spending time with them. And I don't know. It's cool to be out on the road with people you respect and people you kind of grew up listening to. I mean, Knapsack for me. On our first tour, do you remember? I befriended a girl and we were analog pen pals.
Did you have a 5-letter limit or it was
no, it's just when I don't even know. Life happened and we don't write to each other.
I'm starting to worry how to close this pen pal thing now too though. I'm thinking about this now. How do you sign off? Who's the I'm
you
getting very
to.
Larry David over here.
Yeah. Larry David would fake his death. So.
Yeah, that's what I know. Whatever it is, it's gonna be extreme and unnecessary. So anyway, go ahead.
Movie Life's first tour was with Inside. Do you know Inside?
It sounds familiar.
They were emo as shit. They were like Long Island's answer to like Mineral and like Sunny Day.
There's a band like Sleeposaurus and these bands I've heard of, but okay. I don't really totally know.
Inside was next generation right after that, though.
Okay.
Not during Sleeposaurus.
Got it.
Yeah, Inside was like going, like they were playing at the same time as Silent Majority. They started later than Silent Majority, but... Eddie Reyes from who started Movie Life and Taking Back Sunday and Mind Over Matter. He was in Inside.
Okay, gotcha.
So we played Great Falls, Montana, and I made a friend, and we were pen pals, and she sent me a mixtape, and it had Knapsack, Thursday Side of the Street on it. And that's, 1998, I think, is when I got that song. And ever since then, I've been a huge Knapsack fan, so it's means a lot that those guys are going to be out with us, and it's a band that I'll be watching.
Yeah, we were talking about this too. I felt like I was like, Rise seems like a label where, like, if I had a label and I could sign anyone, I was like, oh yeah, I'll sign Blair's Band, I'll sign Hot Water, I'll sign At the Drive-In, I'll sign the movie. It's cool.
Looks like, they're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of success with a lot of, he's had a broad kind of, roster, and they've sold a ton of records. And it seems like lately he's been signing, I don't know, bands that, it's different. He signed Hot Water at the Drive-In, us,
I think they even did a Placebo record too. And that's what I really like about it is the eclectic mix of maybe at one time they were this kind of label, and I feel like that might be changing now, and that was very appealing for me when signing with them.
Yeah, I think that's like, for us, we wanted to know what was going on with the label, and what was going on was he was signing a bunch of bands that we like. And it was easy. And it's really cool because, for us to even sign to a label, we haven't signed a deal since we're 2001 or something.
You guys were on Drive Thru originally.
We signed a Drive Thru. Drive Thru bought us out of Revelation Records.
Oh really? I never knew that.
Our first record came out on Revelation.
Oh right.
And before Revelation, we had put out a 7-inch on Initial.
Really?
And that was where we were at, and we started gaining steam, and we started wanting to go really hard. And Drive Thru came into the picture, and really, the Drive Thru thing was amazing for us. We signed a record deal. And got a van and a trailer and gear and a good recording budget and actual things that bands that are trying to take it further need, we had our van wreck.
Right. Yeah.
We wrecked our van. We flipped our van in South Dakota and wrecked everything. And Drive Thru was kind of knocking on our door right around the same time, and we were kind of like, well, we need this, and this. And they were like, cool. And we were like, okay. And that's kind of how that came about.
Nice. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
We
were never a hardcore band, but we were, our era of Revelation was also very broad. It was not,
was this Speak 714?
No, I think it was probably a little past that. The records that came out around when we released our Rev record were Drowning Man. Which Drowning Man record was that? They always had clever names for their records.
I know. I can't remember.
Whatever the Drowning Man record was.
It was definitely more it started getting a little more post-hardcore at the time when we were doing it. So we were, it kind of worked for us because even though we were doing some stuff that was pretty punk hardcore though at the time.
Yeah, fast tempos and gang vocals and things like that going on, but it wasn't probably Drowning Man, By a Thread.
Okay.
Himsa?
Garrison.
Since by Himsa. Man, maybe.
Himsa?
Since by Man, maybe.
Yeah.
Judas Factor.
Right.
I think In My Eyes was going, In My Eyes was probably doing their last record.
Okay.
Fast Break was doing a record. I think Fast Break record came out before we signed for sure, but that was still going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably, Game Face.
Game Face, yeah.
That kind of stuff. So it was kind of like a broad kind of Rev. It wasn't just a hardcore.
Right.
Although, Rev had been doing that for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Sensefield and Shades Apart and all that stuff was not hardcore, you know?
I'm having a flashback to, like, meeting you on, like, Warped Tour, like, Drive Through Record stage, like, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Is that possible?
Yeah, we've crossed paths many times.
Yeah.
But we've never... We would see each other and then see each other again, like, 3 or 4 years later, so we never got down. This is the closest we've ever been.
Yeah.
I ran into you at the... Well, we had a nice lunch.
We did.
I actually ran into you at that emo night that I was telling you about.
I was just thinking, as you were telling that story, I was like, I remember being pretty drunk, but I think I saw the guy from All Time Low DJ at emo night, and I think Marky was there. Yeah, I was at that.
Yeah. But anyway, I think me and you are friends now.
Yeah, I think it's official.
Like,
I think Lobster Roll is really...
We text each other sometimes.
It's true. It's true.
And just kind of...
I mean, lobster rolls are $25 for one. That's...
At least that. Yeah. I think we had, like, I might have got bacon and avocado added to it.
30?
Maybe some corn.
Yeah, it might be a solid 30.
Yeah.
Some corn.
I ate there 2 nights ago.
It's good.
I sat at the same table we sat at.
Nice. I was on your Wikipedia page today, and I saw it said Frank from iChem played in the movie Life.
Oh, I can't wait to see this.
Let's just add fake news.
That's amazing.
I think I saw that. Maybe I made that up.
I don't think.
Why wouldn't it be on there? But
everything on Wikipedia is true.
It's a little too wild and random for it to be him.
Are you checking it out?
I'm checking it out right now.
Check it out.
Frank was never in movie life. But we toured with iChem. They opened a tour that we did, right?
Yeah, no.
What bands?
No, he's not in the past members.
He's not?
No.
They Used, and that was that tour, right?
They Used and iChem.
And who else? And there was like another co-headliner with The Used. iChem opened and nobody knew who they were. And Movie Life was second.
Really?
Finch?
I think it was Finch. Yeah, it might have been Finch.
Yeah, I think it was Finch. So and iChem opened, and so we toured with them and stuff. But
interesting, maybe I made that up. I don't know.
iChem took Nightmare of You on tour,
and then they took Nightmare of You on tour. So we've done a lot of paths of Frank, but
yeah.
I haven't heard his new band.
It's good.
I see that they're doing a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I gotta check it out.
You gotta check it out.
He's a really nice dude. Yes. I haven't talked to him. Maybe I ran into him when I went and I saw your show with... I'm a big Nightmare of You fan, so I went and saw your show with iChem at the Downtown on Long Island.
Oh, okay.
I was very drunk.
Yeah, I was curious, are you guys... I mean, obviously you have the new Movie Life record coming out, but you guys also do solo stuff as well. I mean, are you... How do you sort of... Do you just kind of like map out the schedule, like this is going to be the cycle for this? And
It's even less than that. It's like... Oh, Movie Life's not doing something for these 3 months. Okay, I'm gonna make an EP. Like it was just like filling in the gap with staying creative, basically, and you know maybe it'll supplement something. But it's really just for fun.
We were talking about like bringing our music out with us, like having it be like on the side by the merch table.
Yeah,
like here's our stuff. Movie Life stuff, and if you were interested in like you know anything else,
right,
here's me and Brandon's music. Like we were talking about doing that because I mean
it's not going to hurt anything. It's only going to help, right?
So that's what like I think we're still trying to figure that out, like, but it's true now with Movie Life, with especially with the record cycle starting, it's going to be hard to figure out how to do solo stuff. I mean weekend trips and things like that, but I always want to do solo stuff. We do solo stuff together all the time, so it's almost like we'll be together anyway, but you're allowed to do solo shows without me.
Yeah, you sell the record. You guys can sell your zines.
Yeah, I mean, we
can bring Movie Life stuff on our solo tours. Yeah.
There hasn't even been time to, you know, entertain the idea of doing a solo show. We've just been so busy.
Yeah.
With that stuff.
It must feel good, though, for it to finally be coming out after all this work, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's crazy. And like he said, I haven't listened to the album in a few months, so Because, you know, if I was listening to the whole, during this whole time, I'd be like, this is not good anymore.
Yeah.
I'm burnt out. So it'll be nice to revisit it and, you know, in August. And just kind of like get my chops up on the new songs and before we go to practice. But, yeah, but when we put the first song out, I listened to it. I was like, oh, wow, it's good to hear it.
Yeah.
After not hearing it.
I listened to Jawbreaker Dear You recently because I had completely ruined that record for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like 10 different times in my life, probably.
Yeah, same here.
I listened to it in the shower the other day. Wow.
Yeah, what a record.
You ruined it in what way? Listen to it too much? Or
yeah, like for like a year straight and then give it a rest. And then once you put it on, you're just like, oh, this is, you know.
Yeah, when you listen, I think when you listen to a record addictively, you stop actually enjoying it and it's more compulsive.
Yeah.
But I think after you just like let it breathe for a little while and you revisit it, you're like, you can actually just rehear it, sort of.
Dear You, so fucking good.
It is good. It's a very polarizing record, though. People are very divided on it, I feel like.
Such bullshit.
They're still divided on it?
Now?
I mean, I don't know.
I thought it was a scientific fact that Dear You was the best Jawbreaker record.
It's definitely not a scientific fact. I have a lot of friends that are like, well,
I think Orange Rhyming Dictionary is the best Jawbreaker record. So,
how do you feel about...
No, it's not a Jawbreaker. I'm just kidding.
You were very convincing.
I'll take a Jets of Brazil reunion over a Jawbreaker reunion.
Dude,
ten times out of ten.
We have a member of Jets of Brazil on an upcoming podcast.
Ooh, I'm covering a Jets song.
Daily.
Oh, cool.
And we ask about it.
Awesome.
I don't know if it'll come up before or after this, but he has an interesting story about it. But here's a record I want to ask you about. We're almost done, but this is a record my friend loves Jawbreaker, loves Jets, hates Perfecting Loneliness.
Oh, he's wrong.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I say, but he's like, dude, I don't understand how you like this record.
I'm into every Jets record, almost the same.
It's great.
It might have less good songs.
Yeah.
But Cat Heaven is one of the best, right?
Yeah.
That's a song that I'm covering for Pledge. That's one of the songs.
Nice.
Cat Heaven. Yeah. Nice. But like the first 70% of the record is like, it's just Brazil to me.
We did a live podcast with Blake and he played Sweet Avenue.
Oh my God. Really?
It's, but Mike Dubin was in the front row and shot like amazing video of it. It's on YouTube.
Cool. That's awesome.
I'll send you a link to it or something.
Okay. Oh, God,
I won't be at Riot Fest. No. But I imagine that we live in New York and everyone comes to us and we'll see.
If they're going
to
do more shows, they're going to have to do in here. Yeah. They got to do New York.
They have to. Why wouldn't they do more shows? If they get it all together, it's the same with Movie Life. It was like, well, we're going to practice for months and months to become a band again and then just play one show?
But that's something.
Outside? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
outdoors.
I feel like that's kind of what happened with the Misfits.
It's what everybody does, and it's what drives me fucking nuts because I hate outdoor shows.
But then I feel like whenever I bank on the band's going to do more shows, they never do. Like I'm like,
Jawbreaker, man, it can go anyway.
Exactly.
You don't know what you're going to get.
He held pretty fucking firm for a long time. I'm sure they were getting offers.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He might start mozzing you guys,
Jets,
though.
Man.
Yeah.
He might start pulling a Morrissey.
Oh my God.
Just not showing up. And, you know, like I could see it.
I hope it goes well.
I hope it does.
I hope
too.
Jawbreaker goes really well.
Yeah, me too.
Movie Life Jawbreaker tour.
Oh, I'll pay. I tweeted to Jawbreaker that I say, please take us on tour.
Yeah, that'd be a good.
Everyone liked it, but them. So I think Chris runs it, the guitar, one of the guys runs the Twitter page, the one who does like all the job, he kind of runs the band,
the label and stuff.
But right when I saw the arena, I was like, let's take Movie Life out.
Yeah, we'll buy on.
Yeah.
We'll buy on to the tour. It's just basically just going to see Jawbreaker every night.
Yeah, you don't have to pay me.
Yeah.
And then slowly, like on the off day, I'll be like, maybe you do a solo set.
Yeah.
Maybe we do solo sets in a bar and you play all Jets to Brazil songs for us. I have designs.
Yeah.
I need Jets, man. I'll never listen to Jawbreaker again in my life if it means I can see Jets to Brazil play a set.
Wow.
They have three great records. What? If they close at Rocket Boy, I might... I'm not, you know that I'm not dissing Jets to Brazil. Yeah. I just said that they're better than Jawbreaker, which yeah. I bet Blake would appreciate that.
Yeah, he's
I bet
he hope would that too. He edits this correctly, otherwise.
We got to let me know.
We could change the narrative really quickly.
For real, though, I mean, Dear You is amazing, and there's no way that Dear You now isn't the best Jawbreaker record. And I understand nostalgia, and I understand the record that you got into first, you know? But I don't know if you guys are into Seaweed. Are you guys Seaweed guys? Spanaway is the best Seaweed record, but that's their last record. And there might be people in Tacoma that think Weak or Despised is the best record, but I got into Despised and Weak first. But still, Spanaway came out on a major label, same exact theory, story.
Yeah. Right, right.
And those were their best records. It just so happened that their like records that flopped because it was major label were the best ones still, I yeah. think.
Well, yeah. sonically, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I love 24 Hour Revenge Therapy, but
I think I'm that's the front runner, but yeah.
Yeah. I totally get it. It's a different record. It's very different and it's more like rootsy.
Sure.
But I remember the backlash when they put out Dear You with like, you know, basically the hardcore kids on Long Island, but like that has to have worn off by now, and everybody must realize that that's the best one. You know, it's the Pinkerton. You know,
it's the Pinkerton.
Because Pinkerton, I think everyone liked Pinkerton though.
But I think they liked it at the time. It just wasn't. It just didn't beat.
Well, I think that was the whole thing. I heard that he like was bummed because he thought it was a failure.
Yeah, but everyone was like, "This is the best one."
Yeah, like, when I worked at AP, we did like a big story with him, and he had no. This was like a long. This was like 10, 15 years ago, but he had like no idea people like loved that record. We're like, no, everyone in this scene worships this record, and he was like, "What, really?" And now I think they did the reissue, and they did the tour, and they know. But yeah. I think it was very surprising.
You were the catalyst for that.
Well, it was the cool...
I don't know if it was me personally, but I was like part of
it. Did they give you an AP award at the last award for being the guy that made Rivers play Pinkerton songs again?
That deserves an award.
It does. I don't think I'm that guy.
The title.
I wish I was. I mean, I think I was like at the magazine when that happened, but I don't think I was like, let me get Rivers on the phone.
You were one instrument in the process of the whole moving...
Yeah, we can say I was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
what was the award that did you go this year?
I did not go this year.
Oh, right. We discussed that at the Flatliner show.
Oh, yeah, the Flatliners.
But they gave John Feldman an award, right?
They gave John Feldman.
What was the award?
Some kind of like, I don't know the exact name, like the Vanguard or some kind of like lifetime achievement type of award for.
Oh, cool.
And then he played with this, like a punk band from Asia, like OK, A-OK.
Oh, the Japanese band.
Yes.
Who's like the Beatles in, I don't know what it's called, but yeah, they're like the Beatles in Japan.
Yeah, they were a band where I was like, I have never heard of this band, but they look like they're huge. And then I went online and it was like people were losing their minds.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope I'm not burping on this whole podcast. I feel like
those are silent burps, dude.
Yeah, I don't hear it.
Yeah, but you don't have headphones on right now. For all you know, like this could
Brad,
be...
edit those out. Yeah, edit every single one out.
Yeah, but they're not. They're worse than like a loud burp. They're like.
they're like reverb
burps that you swallow. I'm drinking a very hoppy beer and it's very bubbly.
Yeah.
Just.
This is all they had at the, you know.
That's a good beer, man.
I love that beer.
Yeah.
It's strong.
Yeah, it's a little hoppy, but I like it.
There's those at Union Hall. They have those tall boys of it.
It's a dependable IPA.
Yeah, it is. And I needed, I wanted like a strong beer. Like I've had like a allergy, like whole life situation today. So I wanted to kind of like blast through it with this beer. It's working.
Good.
Yeah. So we're going to jam now, right?
All yeah, let's do it. We got all these gear. Start a band.
All right, let's go.
I got a few band names.
Yeah.
I got a few that I haven't used.
Yeah, you got to save those. You do not want to give them out in the podcast. It's tough to come up. Me and Steve have been trying to come up with a band name for a while.
What kind of, what genre?
I'd say it's like very, mega, very influenced by like Bedhead. And like just
like
kind of
like the hair product or the
The hair product and the touch and go band.
Like a I lot don't of know, like, Bedhead.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, I never heard of them.
Bedhead, like Silkworm, like those kind of like it's like early 2000s.
Silkworm is awesome.
Yes.
I remember hearing Silkworm.
Silkworm's amazing, one of my favorite bands. But yeah, kinda like it's more bedheady, but like that's it. Yeah, just kind of drony, slow. How do you Yeah.
Slow Journey?
The name I wanted, that I had like every name I come up with is stupid and it's also taken. I was like, because I like Bedhead, I like that like two syllable. I was like, what about like Ottoman? Like, nope, taken. And I was like, really?
Ottoman?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was stupid enough where it was available.
Davenport. That's what I thought.
Any one word, there's no.
Everything
there's
is
no
taken.
There's no one word.
But there's a lot of, think about it, like you have some of your, you know, all of our favorite bands, some of them have bad names, but you quickly forget about that and it just becomes a word.
Yes.
That's associated with that thing you like. You
but
know?
Now it's hard to even find a bad name that isn't taken. Because I feel like there should be some kind of like statute of limitations where like just because you have a Bandcamp page like from 12 years ago doesn't mean that you have Rice's thing forever.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they do, and I don't think that they would fight you in court over it. What I learned is, I would look on Spotify to see if things were called that, but that's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to look on AllMusic.
AllMusic.
Because we were trying to name this record, and we thought we had a few real good ones that we loved and we were going to stick with. And our manager was like, no, you need to look at AllMusic because it has like everything. Spotify does not.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you could really find out like, all right, they released a record, a full-length record, in this year. Okay, fine. It was in 1981. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, you know if it was a band that had like a one-off EP in 1967,
right.
Take the name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are situations where you can take it and run with it.
So were you checking to see, like, make sure no one's had this album name?
And that doesn't...
I want it to be unique.
Yeah, like, if legally it wouldn't have mattered.
Looks it up or if someone searches it, I don't want there to be 10 other records called that. You know?
Right.
It's good to have it be unique, I think, in that respect, because everyone's just searching things. You know, nobody's going to a record store and digging and stuff. They're just typing it into their phone and searching what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So the more unique, the easier you'll find it, I think.
I mean, you're talking to a guy who's in a band called United Nations, which is like the worst name to search ever. Yeah.
I really like that name.
Yeah, it's a good name.
It's a great name.
Oh, and I think I'm sorry, for the search engine.
For the search engine stuff, it's hard, though. It's tough. Yeah. Movie Life seems pretty good, actually.
Well, there is a movie called Life, so I went and saw, you know, the Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy film?
No, I don't.
Oh, they're like, I've never seen it, but it's like I think they're prisoners. I remember, like, the DVD cover.
It's called Life.
Have you seen this one? No?
Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy for sure. And I think on the DVD box, like on the cover, they're wearing like, you know, black and white striped like prisoners uniforms. Something like that. I hope I remember that right. But yeah, if you search the movie Life, like if you don't make movie life one word,
right,
then yeah, you might like the image that comes up might be that DVD cover.
And you've never seen it?
The movie? No, I haven't. No. But yeah, I've always been aware of it.
You haven't seen the movie Life?
I haven't seen the movie Life. I've eaten the cereal Life.
Yeah.
Grew up on that stuff. Love it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, cinnamon Life.
Just another quick reminder, our Patreon account is up and active. You can go check it out at patreon.com/goingofftrack and also via our website.
All right. Thank you to The Movie Life. Thank you to Vinny and Brandon for
coming
by.
Thank you to Pulse Music for hosting our recording session
for
this podcast.
Thank you to their manager, Anna, and publicist, Tito, for helping set it up.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you to everyone who's donated via Venmo.
Let me thank some people. We have this Venmo account. It's off track if you haven't figured it out yet. And we're wide open to, deferring any server costs and also trying to make a little money so that we don't put ads in these things.
Yeah.
And let's see. I'm going to rattle off a few people who have been generous lately. Aaron Finney, thank you. Robert Gagneau.
Thank you.
Brandon Weinberg.
Yes.
Brandon, very good, dude. Nice job. Of course, Ren Volpe, our new executive producer, going off track.
RV in the house.
what do we get here? Shannon Holmes, thanks. Siobhan. There's a bunch more of you. But yeah, it's it helps. So off track, Venmo at off track. Or you can also donate via PayPal if you want.
Or you can buy me a beer if you see me. This has happened before, and I like it.
Yeah. It'll actually, you know, it goes a long way towards supporting the podcast, buying Jonah a beer, for sure. Just keep him happy, man.
Yeah.
The happier you keep Jonah, the less we have to, like, actually try
it's
to
pay. True. I can be a real taskmaster. don't let my laid-back persona fool you. I'm a real jerk sometimes.
Check out my label, Soundwag, at soundwag.com. I just released my friend's record, The Worried. If you like sort of semi-blues-based, like punk rock, hard rock and roll type stuff, two of the guys are guys that I played with many years ago. And I just released their full length. It's The Worried. You deserve this. So
yeah.
I'm probably going to try to, I should promote the label more. I think I'm going to have a few more releases coming up. I released some unreleased Goops material a couple months ago, and I got some other stuff.
Have you thought about doing any like vinyl or kind of physical?
No, I don't want to spend any money.
Yeah.
Smart. I have a grandfathered sort of distribution deal that's really nice, and it doesn't really cost me anything to release product.
Okay.
I don't really promote it. Like, to this point, it's been either my stuff or friends' records, mostly like re-releases. Like, this is actually a CD that they did on their own, and they needed the digital distribution, so I did it for them. So I don't do any PR. I don't want to spend any money.
Great. Well, you have this huge podcast, which is a huge platform. So yes. I think propping it at the very end of it after the guests have been
for
on.
For the three people.
Yeah, I think this is a very good marketing, and you're going to probably have the number one record in America this week. Anyways, thanks. Oh, yeah. And also, if you can't donate, that's okay. You can go to iTunes and leave us a nice review. Say something nice. That goes a long way. Right?
Yeah, man.
I don't know. I've never done that for any podcast, but I'm going to ask you to do it.
People are doing it for us.
Yeah.
And so they're all glowing. So thanks to all of you that have already left reviews.
Thanks to everyone who has done that, especially people that we aren't related to. I'm pretty sure people in my family have done it. Maybe not. I don't know. Anyways, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another wonderful, wonderful podcast by the new Movie Life Record.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.